Welcome back to Science TLDR, the podcast that, you know, tries to distill all those dense research papers into something you can actually think about, maybe on your commute or with your coffee, something like that. And today, we are really diving deep into the world of tumor immunology. Specifically, we're looking at a review article from Trends in Cancer, and the title is, it's a mouthful, The 3 C's of Immune Evasion, Camouflage, Coercion, and Cytoprotection.
Yeah, you know, this paper really caught my eye because it's trying to build a new framework, right? It wants to move us beyond that classic 3 E's model of cancer immunoediting.
Right, right. The elimination equilibrium escape model.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as useful as that's been, it has always felt a bit, I don't know, simplistic.
For sure.
So, okay, what are these 3 C's then? What makes them, you know, potentially valuable, a valuable addition to the field?
Well, the authors, they argue that to really target a tumor's defenses effectively, we need like a much deeper understanding of the mechanisms it's using to evade immune surveillance in the first place, right?
Okay, yeah.
So they propose that we categorize these mechanisms as camouflage, coercion, and cytoprotection.
I kind of like it.
Yeah, think of it like a military analogy, right?
Okay.
Camouflage, you're hiding from the enemy. Coercion, you're like disrupting their communication, turning their weapons against them. And then cytoprotection, you're fortifying your defenses to withstand attack.
Okay, I am intrigued. I am intrigued. Let's break down each C then. Let's start with camouflage. So how do tumor cells make themselves invisible to the immune system, so to speak?
Well, they've got a whole like arsenal of tricks, right?
Yeah.
One of the major ones is they interfere with antigen processing and presentation.
Okay.
So for a cytotoxic T cell to even recognize a tumor cell as a threat, right, it has to be presented with neoantigens. Those are the tumor-specific peptides on MHC class molecules. It's like those neoantigens, they're the wanted posters the immune system uses.
I like that.
Yeah, to ID their targets.
So, but if the tumor cell can mess with that process, it's basically taking down the wanted posters, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Itself invisible.
Invisible to the immune police, yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
And the paper, you know, it goes into some depth about the genetic and epigenetic mechanisms behind this.
Oh, interesting.
You've got mutations, deletions in genes involved in antigen processing. Like we're talking TAP1, TAP2. These are the ones that shuttle those peptides into the endoplasmic reticulum to get loaded onto MHC class I.
Right.
Then you've got epigenetic modifications that can like silence the expression of MHC class I genes themselves, or even the genes for components of that whole antigen processing machinery, like the proteasome subunits.
Oh, wow. So it's like the tumor cell is what donning a disguise to evade detection.
Exactly. Yeah. And it gets even more insidious.
I don't know.
The paper also talks about how tumors can evade the very cells that are supposed to raise the alarm in the first place, the antigen presenting cells, the APCs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So even if you've got, you know, some immune cells kind of patrolling the area, they might not even know there's a problem because the tumor cells are blocking the emergency broadcast signal.
That is a great way to put it. Yeah.
I like that.
So one way they do this is by interfering with the release of those what were called find me signals. These are like chemoattractants,
right,
that would normally lure the APCs to the tumor site, like
right,
ATP and annexin A1.
Okay.
These are both potent chemoattractants, and they're often found at like way reduced levels in the tumor microenvironment.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it's making it harder for those APCs to even find the tumor in the first place.
Exactly.
And then there's that concept of immunogenic cell death, the ICD, right?
Yes, yes.
Where dying tumor cells, they release these damage-associated molecular patterns, the DAMPs,
right,
which are supposed to trigger this like potent immune response.
Yeah, it's like they're supposed to go down fighting, you know, alerting the immune system to the threat. But the paper points out that tumor cells can sabotage this process too.
Oh, great.
Yeah, they can downregulate. They can even like sequester calreticulin,
okay,
which is a protein that basically acts as an eat me signal for phagocytes like dendritic cells.
Oh, so without this signal, those crucial APCs are less likely to engulf the dying tumor cells.
Right.
And essentially missing out on that crucial antigen presentation step.
Exactly.
It's like a multi-layered defense system.
Yeah.
Like they've studied the immune system's playbook and they are actively counteracting every move.
Totally. Yeah. And we haven't even touched on the physical barriers they create.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. The paper details how tumor cells can actually manipulate their surroundings.
Mm.
They can construct physical obstacles to keep immune cells out.
Exclusion, right. It's like they're building fortresses to protect themselves.
Exactly. Precisely. They do this by, you know, influencing the behavior of cells in the tumor microenvironment, like cancer-associated fibroblasts, the CCAS, and tumor-associated macrophages, TAMs.
Right.
And these cells can deposit, like, excessive amounts of collagen, other extracellular matrix components, and it creates this dense stroma that acts as a physical barrier.
Wow. The paper cites some really interesting studies on urothelial, colorectal, and lung cancer that demonstrate the impact of this exclusion tactic, particularly in the context of resistance to immune checkpoint inhibitors.
Yeah, and it highlights, you know, a really crucial challenge. Even when we develop these powerful immunotherapies, tumor cells are constantly evolving ways to circumvent them.
Of course, they're always one step ahead.
Right.
It seems like it.
Speaking of which, let's move on to the next C, coercion. This is where things get really interesting, because now we're not just talking about passive evasion.
Right.
We're talking about active suppression of the immune response.
So they're going on the offensive, directly disarming the immune cells that manage to penetrate their defenses.
Precisely.
And one of their primary weapons is manipulating what are called immunomodulatory ligands. So these are molecules on their surface that can either activate or inhibit immune cells.
Okay, and a prime example is PD-L1, right?
Yes, exactly.
This molecule acts as a brake on T cells, preventing them from, you know, going full throttle against the tumor.
Exactly. Tumor cells have become masters at exploiting this pathway. They upregulate PD-L1 expression through all sorts of mechanisms, gene amplification, transcriptional activation, post-translational modifications, you name it.
It's remarkable how they can manipulate these pathways.
It is. The paper goes into detail about all the different signaling pathways and transcription factors involved, like HIF-1, STATE-D3, NFB.
Which is precisely why blocking this pathway with immune checkpoint inhibitors has been, it's been revolutionary for certain cancers.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, it's a huge breakthrough.
Huge.
But as the paper points out, there's this whole spectrum of other ligands that tumor cells are manipulating to their advantage.
Oh, yeah.
Right. They can downregulate activating ligands that would normally stimulate an immune response, or upregulate inhibitory ligands that suppress immune cell activity.
Right.
It's like they're turning the immune system's own weapons against it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
It's like they're reprogramming the immune system software.
Yeah.
Turning allies into bystanders or even accomplices.
A chillingly accurate analogy. And this coercion, it extends beyond T cells too, right? They can suppress the activity of natural killer cells, dendritic cells, all these other crucial players in the anti-tumor immune response.
And the paper, you know, dives into this fascinating detail about how they accomplish this, from like epigenetic silencing of activating ligand genes to these intricate signaling cascades that dampen immune cell activation. It's incredible.
It really is fascinating, yeah, how they can do that. And it's not just about cell surface molecules either. They can also interfere with the innate immune system's ability to detect those danger signals we talked about earlier, the DAMPs.
Right, which are like the alarm bells that alert the immune system to damage or infection.
Right, exactly. Tumor cells can silence those alarms by interfering with what are called pattern recognition receptors, the PRRs.
Okay.
These are responsible for detecting the DAMPs.
Right.
They can also mess with the downstream signaling pathways that lead to the production of type I interferons.
Right.
And those are crucial molecules for mounting an effective immune response.
So they're not just hiding. It's like they're actively jamming the communication channels.
Exactly. Yeah. And the paper really highlights the CGA sting pathway as a prime example here. So this pathway, it's essential for sensing cytosolic DNA.
Right, right.
Which is a potent danger signal, especially in the context of viral infection or cellular damage.
Right, because under normal circumstances, your DNA is supposed to be, you know, in the nucleus.
Right, confined to the nucleus, the mitochondria.
Yeah, exactly.
So finding it in the cytoplasm is a huge red flag.
Yes, exactly. Like, it's out of place, something's wrong.
Exactly.
So the CGAS sting pathway is like a key sensor for this type of danger signal.
Right. When CGAS detects that cytosolic DNA, it activates sting, which triggers this whole cascade of signaling events. And ultimately, that leads to the production of type I interferons and other inflammatory cytokines.
But you're saying tumor cells can interfere with this pathway too.
It can, yeah. The paper details a whole bunch of mechanisms. Mutations in CGAS or estenines, you can have epigenetic silencing of their expression. There's even like direct protein protein interactions that block their activity.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's even evidence that tumor cells can upregulate the enzymes that degrade cytosolic DNA. So they're like trying to sweep the evidence under the rug.
So sneaky. It's like they know they've got to get rid of the evidence before the immune system sees it.
Exactly, exactly. So they're not just evading detection. They're actively suppressing the signals that would normally trigger that immune response.
And this manipulation, does it extend to other aspects of the innate immune response too?
It does, yeah. For example, tumor cells can interfere with the inflammasome.
Okay, which is this multi-protein complex that activates caspase 1, leading to the maturation and release of pro-inflammatory cytokines, like IL-1 and IL-18.
So they're essentially disarming another key component of the innate immune system.
Exactly, yeah. And they can do this by inhibiting inflammasome assembly, by blocking the activity of caspase 1, or even by degrading the mature cytokines themselves.
Wow, so it's a multi-pronged approach to immune suppression.
It really is, yeah.
It's remarkable how they've evolved all these mechanisms to like subvert the immune system at all these different levels.
Yeah, it's really quite impressive. And it gets even more complex when you consider the interplay between these different mechanisms. For instance, the paper talks about how chronic inflammation, which we generally think of as a hallmark of an active immune response, can actually benefit tumor progression in some contexts.
That seems counterintuitive. How can inflammation, which is supposed to be the body's way of fighting off these threats, actually help the tumor? Yeah, it's really a matter of balance and context. Acute inflammation, that rapid short-term response to injury or infection, that's generally beneficial.
Right, right.
It fights off pathogens, it initiates tissue repair, but then you have chronic low-grade inflammation. It's like the kind that simmers beneath the surface for a long time, and that can actually create an environment where tumor development and progression can thrive.
So the tumor is basically hijacking the inflammatory response for its own benefit.
Exactly, yeah. Chronic inflammation, it can promote angiogenesis, which supplies the tumor with nutrients and oxygen. It can create a pool of growth factors and signaling molecules that stimulate tumor cell proliferation and survival. And importantly, it can lead to the accumulation of immunosuppressive cells within the tumor microenvironment.
Oh, wow. Bye. It's like the tumor is setting up its own little ecosystem where it can evade immune surveillance and just thrive.
A very apt analogy, yeah. And one of the key mediators of this chronic inflammatory state is, unsurprisingly, TGF.
Right, TGF. We've talked about that before.
Yeah, exactly. It's a master regulator of immune responses, and tumor cells can exploit its diverse functions to their advantage.
Of course.
The paper highlights how TGF-beta can suppress the activity of cytotoxic T cells, natural killer cells. It can even promote the differentiation of regulatory T cells and myeloid-derived suppressor cells. And it can even induce the expression of other immunosuppressive molecules, like PD-L1.
So TGF-beta is like a Swiss Army knife of immune suppression.
Exactly, yeah. And its role in promoting chronic inflammation just adds another layer of complexity to it.
This is all incredibly intricate.
It is, yeah.
But it really highlights just how important it is to understand these mechanisms in detail.
Absolutely.
Especially if we want to develop better cancer therapies.
Absolutely, yeah. And speaking of therapies, you know, the paper doesn't just give this laundry list of evasion mechanisms. It actually goes into some potential therapeutic strategies to counteract them, which I thought was really interesting.
Let's dive into that then. What are some of the approaches being explored to, like, overcome these immune evasion tactics?
Well, given how complex the problem is, it's not surprising that there's no, you know, single magic bullet solution.
Right, right.
Instead, researchers are really taking this multi-pronged approach. They're targeting different aspects of those three C's.
Okay, so starting with camouflage,
mm-hmm.
How do you, like, unmask a tumor cell that's gone into hiding?
One strategy is to enhance antigen presentation.
Okay.
Make it harder for the tumor cells to avoid detection by those cytotoxic T cells.
Okay, so it's about boosting the immune system's ability to recognize the tumor as a threat in the first place.
Exactly, yeah. So this can involve developing things like personalized cancer vaccines that target specific neoantigens.
Okay.
Or even using epigenetic modifiers to upregulate MHC class expression on tumor cells.
So you're kind of like forcing them to put those wanted posters back up.
Exactly. Another approach is to target those don't eat me signals that we were talking about before.
Right.
The ones that the tumor cells use to evade phagocytosis. There's a lot of interest right now in CD47. It's a protein that interacts with SIRPα on macrophages.
Okay.
And it sends this inhibitory signal that basically prevents phagocytosis.
Oh, so it's like CD47 is waving this flag that says, don't eat me, I'm one of the good guys.
Exactly, yeah. And there are actually clinical trials now testing antibodies that block CD47, and there are some promising early results.
That's exciting.
It is exciting, yeah. So the idea is that if you can block that don't eat me signal, those tumor cells are unmasked and they're much more susceptible to phagocytosis by macrophages and other antigen-presenting cells.
So you're telling the immune system, go ahead, take a bite.
Exactly, yeah.
Love it. Okay, so what about coercion?
Right, coercion. This one presents a whole other set of challenges, right?
Right.
Because here, the goal is to disrupt those immunosuppressive signals that tumor cells are using to dampen the immune response.
And we've already seen some success with this approach, right? Immune checkpoint inhibitors like the anti-PD-1 and anti-CTLA-4 antibodies, those have been revolutionary for treating certain cancers.
Absolutely, yeah, they've been huge. But as this paper points out, there are many other inhibitory receptors and ligands that tumor cells can use, and targeting those is a huge area of research right now.
Okay.
We've already touched on a few of them: TIM-3, LAG-3, TIGIT, VISTA.
Right.
There are clinical trials going on right now testing antibodies, small molecule inhibitors, against these targets, both alone and in combination with existing therapies.
It's like playing a game of whack-a-mole, trying to block every escape route that the tumor might use.
It kind of is like that, yeah. And it just highlights how complex the tumor microenvironment really is and the need for personalized approaches to treatment. Different tumors, different regions within the same tumor, they might rely on different immunosuppressive mechanisms.
Oh, one size fits all approach isn't going to cut it.
Exactly, yeah. We need to develop better ways to profile the immune landscape of individual tumors, figure out what the key immunosuppressive pathways are, so we can tailor therapy accordingly.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so then what about cytoprotection? How do you overcome that last line of defense, the tumor's ability to resist even a full-blown immune attack?
Yeah, that's probably the most challenging aspect of tumor immune evasion to target therapeutically.
Right.
One approach is to focus on those intrinsic mechanisms that tumor cells use to evade cell death. So things like upregulation of anti-apoptotic proteins, mutations in those death receptor signaling pathways, even increased DNA damage repair capacity.
So you're trying to make the tumor cells more sensitive to the cytotoxic effects of the immune system.
Exactly. And there are some promising avenues that are being explored right now. For example, there are drugs that inhibit BCL2.
Right.
It's a key anti-apoptotic protein. It's often overexpressed in tumor cells. So by inhibiting BCL2, these drugs can prime the tumor cells for apoptosis, which makes them more susceptible to being killed by immune cells.
That's a really clever strategy, but it seems like a delicate balancing act. You want to make the tumor cells more vulnerable, but not so much that you're harming healthy cells.
Exactly, yeah. That's one of the biggest challenges in drug development, finding that therapeutic window where you can maximize efficacy and minimize toxicity.
Absolutely. What about other approaches to targeting cytoprotection?
Another strategy is to focus on the tumor microenvironment itself. We've talked about how the tumor microenvironment can be really immunosuppressive,
Right.
and it ends up protecting those tumor cells from immune attack. So there's a lot of interest right now in targeting those stromal cells that are creating this protective niche.
Like the CAFs and TAMs we were talking about earlier.
Exactly, yeah. For example, there are drugs in development that target FAP, the fibroblast activation protein. It's expressed on Succus. And the goal there is to deplete the SUCFs or even reprogram them to a less immunosuppressive phenotype.
And what about TAMs? How are researchers targeting those?
TAMs are a little trickier because they're really clastic cells. They can switch between these pro-inflammatory and anti-inflammatory phenotypes depending on the cues they're getting from the tumor microenvironment. So just depleting them might not be the best approach.
Right.
There's more interest now in re-educating them, pushing them towards that more anti-tumor phenotype.
So instead of trying to eliminate them, you're trying to like convert them back to the light side of the force.
Precisely, yeah. And there are a number of strategies that are being explored to do this, from blocking immunosuppressive signals to delivering immune stimulatory cytokines directly to that tumor microenvironment.
This is all so fascinating and complex.
It is, yeah.
But it's encouraging to see how much progress is being made on so many different fronts.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a really exciting time to be in the field.
As we wrap up our discussion of the three C's, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the bigger picture here. What are the limitations of this framework? And what are some questions that still need to be answered?
Yeah, that's an important question. You know, the three C's framework, it's useful. It's a good way to categorize and understand the mechanisms of tumor immune evasion. But we have to remember it's still a simplification of a really, really complex process.
Right, like any model, it's got its limitations.
Exactly. One limitation is that those categories, they're not mutually exclusive.
Okay.
Tumor cells can use multiple mechanisms at the same time, and those mechanisms can interact in complex ways.
Right. So it's not a matter of picking one C to target. You kind of have to understand how they all work together, how they might be reinforcing each other.
Exactly, yeah. And that's the real challenge, I think. We need a more nuanced understanding of these interactions if we want to design really effective therapies.
What are some other questions that still need to be answered?
One big one is how tumor heterogeneity plays into immune evasion. We know tumors aren't these homogeneous masses of identical cells. They're made up of all these different subpopulations of cells, each with its own mutations and gene expression profiles. And that heterogeneity probably extends to immune evasion mechanisms, too.
So different parts of the same tumor could be using different Cs to evade the immune system.
Exactly, yeah. And that has major implications for therapy. A treatment that targets one subpopulation of tumor cells might not work against another. So we need to develop ways to assess that intratumoral heterogeneity and tailor our therapies accordingly.
That makes sense. What about the role of the tumor microenvironment? I mean, we talked about how it can be really immunosuppressive, but how much does that vary from patient to patient?
Right.
And how can we take that variability into account when we're developing treatment strategies?
Those are all critical questions. The tumor microenvironment, it's this complex ecosystem, right? It's got all these different cell types, fibroblasts, immune cells, endothelial cells, and the extracellular matrix components, and all these signaling molecules. And that ecosystem, it can be really different from tumor to tumor, even within different regions of the same tumor.
So it's not even enough to just understand the tumor cells themselves. You have to understand the whole neighborhood that they live in.
Exactly. We need a much more holistic view of the tumor microenvironment and the role it plays in immune evasion if we want to design really effective therapies.
So we're really talking about moving beyond this, like, reductionist view of cancer, right?
Yeah.
It's not just a bunch of rogue cells. It's a whole system. And
yeah.
It's embedded in this really dynamic environment.
Exactly. Yeah. And that systems level perspective is really crucial for understanding how tumors do this, how they evade the immune system. It's not enough to just target like one molecule or one pathway. We've got to think about the whole network of interactions, both within the tumor cell itself and then between the tumor cell and its little world there, the microenvironment.
So complex. But this three C's framework, I mean, it's got to be imperfect, right?
Sure, yeah.
But it seems like a really valuable starting point for at least wrapping our heads around this complexity.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it helps us organize our thinking. You know, where are the vulnerabilities?
Right.
What research directions should we be prioritizing? I think it's really helpful for that.
Definitely. So as we wrap up our deep dive here, I mean, what are your major takeaways for our listeners?
Well, I think first and foremost, we have to remember that tumor immune evasion is this really multifaceted process. It involves this super complex interplay between the tumor cells and the immune system.
Right.
It's like a constant arms race.
Yeah.
Each side is developing new strategies to try to outmaneuver the other.
And this arms race is happening on multiple levels, right? From the genetic and epigenetic changes within the tumor cells themselves to, like we were just talking about, those cellular interactions happening in the tumor microenvironment.
Exactly, yeah. And then second, that three C's framework, it is a simplification.
Right.
But it really is, I think, a valuable lens for understanding, for categorizing all these different evasion mechanisms. And I think it highlights how important it is to think about not just camouflage, but coercion and cytoprotection when we're trying to develop new cancer immunotherapies.
It's a good reminder that, you know, we've got to target multiple aspects of tumor immune evasion at the same time if we really want to see those long-lasting responses in patients.
Exactly. Yeah, we can't just focus on one thing. And then finally, I think this paper just really underscores how important continued research is in this field because it is changing so rapidly. We need to develop, I think, a much more nuanced understanding of this interplay between tumor cells, the immune system, the tumor microenvironment. If we want to design really effective and personalized cancer treatments, I think we've got to, you know, keep digging in, keep asking these questions.
It's a call to action. I love it. For scientists and clinicians alike, right? We've got to embrace the complexity and work together if we really want to outsmart these, you know, formidable foes.
I completely agree.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive into the fascinating and always evolving world of tumor immune evasion.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.